Nikola Tesla died on January 7th, 1943, in the Hotel New Yorker in Manhattan at the time. He was in room 3327. He was on the 33rd floor. Interesting, isn't it? Immediately after Tesla's death, Tesla scientific papers vanished from his hotel room in the Hotel New Yorker. Tesla papers were never found. Tesla papers contained scientific data and information about death rays, which could be used for military purposes. In 1947, the Military Intelligence Service identified the writings about the particle beam contained in the Tesla's scientific papers as extremely important. Military intelligence services of the USA, Germany, and the USSR were vitally interested in Tesla's death rays. The current beam weapon program is probably what he was working on. He was also working on energy, free energy, lots of things from Nikola Tesla. He died, and he took it all with him. Or did he? In a moment, our guest will be Mark DeMuha as we talk about the life of Nikola Tesla. Mark DeMuha is the son of a Los Angeles Police Department narcotics detective. This aided in his early interest in the science of investigation. Mark has been a religious educator, missionary, and student of theology, and he joined the military, and due to an injury, his career came to an abrupt end. He then had the opportunity to attend college on the GI Bill and took some film classes. It was at this time that he and a lifetime friend decided to pool their efforts and resources together and begin the journey of writing the feature-length film, The Tesla Conspiracy. Over the last 3 years, the combination of Mr. DeMuha's investigative skills and Mr. Finley's research and analysis skills have resulted in the discovery of what they believe to be a far-reaching conspiracy to suppress free and clean energy technologies. Mark DeMuha is currently in the final phase of his film production education as a member of the Cinema and Television Arts Department at California State University in Northridge. He's our guest on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, Mark, how are you?
I'm pretty good, George. How are you tonight?
Good. You have at least decided to research and film a most fascinating individual, have you not?
Possibly one of the most interesting people of the last two centuries.
Beyond just what I read about his death in 1943, Mark, tell us about Mr. Tesla.
Well, Nikola Tesla was an interesting character, aside from all the things that he did in the world of science and engineering. Going back into his earlier life, we discovered that he developed kind of a neurotic personality, I guess you could say.
Like all of us, right?
Him a little more so. And I think it's particularly relevant or related to the fact that he felt responsible for his brother's death.
Oh, really? Now, how'd that happen?
His brother, his older brother, at the age of 12, was given permission or the right to ride a horse that their family owned. And Nikola was jealous of his brother's being able to ride. And playing a childish prank, he shot a rock or a pea at his brother's horse from a pea shooter, which resulted in his brother being bucked off the horse and breaking his back, which later led to his death.
So he had to live with that all his life.
And when you look at his life, it's kind of indicative, you know, he was a rather obsessive-compulsive person, specifically in the areas of numbers. He was completely obsessed with the number 3 or any derivative of there, specifically the number 27, which is, of course, the cube of 3.
Well, that's kind of funny, too, because the room was 3327 that he was in. I guess he picked that on purpose.
One would suspect.
Yeah.
It seems to fall in line with the patterns that he followed throughout his life.
Okay. Then that's an aspect of his life, Mark, I was not aware of, this obsession, this compulsion with numbers and what they all meant.
Well, and his obsessive-compulsive nature extended to other parts of his life. He was very fearful of human contact. And quite often he would refuse to shake people's hands and blame it on an injury that he had gotten in the lab.
Was he a germaphobic type guy, or he just didn't want to, you know, deal with people?
Initially, I don't think it was a germophobia situation, but later on in his life, he started demonstrating some of those germ paranoia symptoms.
Like Howard Hughes?
Yeah, he tended to wash his hands excessively. He really had a problem with human hair. for some reason, and nothing has ever been written about it. Or he was not a very open person.
No.
He had a particular aversion to human hair, especially women's hair.
He just didn't want to be around it?
We really don't know. We just know that he had mentioned to some of the people that were closer to him in his inner circle, and he specifically, you know, mentioned or made it known fact that he was aversive to human hair.
All right. Now, he was about 87 when he died, right? Right around there?
Yeah.
So he lived a long, long life. Born in, where was it, Austria-Hungary at the time, in that area?
Well, the political divide at the time was Austria-Hungary. That was the political schism that he was born under. But it was either the town of Lika or the town of Smiljan in what is now Croatia.
Okay. So he was Serbian. I guess you would call him Serbian today, right?
Well, he is documented as being the son of Serbians.
Okay.
His father was a Serbian Orthodox minister, and his mother was a housewife, but rather an inventor herself.
Well, when did he, Mark, start dabbling, do we know, in you know, the electrical, the magnetics? When did he start playing around like that as a scientist?
Well, as a scientist, it really didn't start until he attended university. And it had been his goal or his dream from an earlier point in his childhood to go to school, but his father had wanted him to follow in his footsteps and go into the ministry of the Orthodox Church. And he had a really bad bout with cholera between the ages of 16 and 17, and he kind of conned his father into, "Dad, if I survive, can I go to university?"
So it was one of those, "Dad, I'm dying, please, if I make it through this," and, you know, whatever.
I don't think his father expected him to make it, honestly.
Really? Okay.
From what I've read and from what I've seen, it was kind of one of those deathbed things where, yeah, sure, son, you can go to school. And then he got better.
Well, when did they come here to the United States?
Well, Nikola Tesla, the funny thing is what brought him to America ended up being what was his demise. He originally graduated from the electrical and mechanical engineering program that was offered at the school in Graz. It was the Polytechnic School in Graz.
Okay.
And when he left school, he initially traveled Europe between Paris and Germany, working on direct current generators, trying to make a living. And then he ended up coming up with an idea for an alternating current motor.
Was he well known there at the time?
Well, he was. When you say well known, I don't necessarily know that he had any type of celebrity status, but he was known amongst the inner circle of people that worked in electrical engineering.
And I guess they respected him.
Well, he was respected enough that they continually were able to find him work.
All right.
And then while he was in Budapest, he had, I guess you could say, an epiphany. And the way he described it in his autobiography, he specifically said it came to him like a flash. And he scratched out a design in the sand before him, and then he memorized it in his head.
What was the design of?
It was the design of the first alternating current motor.
It just came to him like that in a flash?
These flash experiences had plagued him as a younger man, and he always viewed them as a curse. Even though some of these flash experiences had the opportunity to save him when he was a younger man, he'd always worked really hard to kind of push them out of his psyche. But this moment, this flash came to him, and he realized that he had something that was revolutionary.
No doubt the guy was a genius, Mark, right?
Well, beyond anything that most of us can comprehend. I mean, his very thought processes are baffling to most people, even that of people with scientific training.
I mean, he has, a lot of people might not know this, more than 700 patents.
And he may have been related to a total of 1,200.
My gosh. I mean, these are some of the things I just know about. And then I want you to jump in and tell me what are the big home runs maybe in this list.
Well,
telephone repeater, right? The rotating magnetic field principle.
Yeah.
The alternating current system, induction motor.
The induction motor is probably, of all the things that he did, probably had the greatest ramification on humankind.
All right, we'll talk about that. The Tesla coil transformer.
Second most important thing, Tesla coil.
Wireless communications, radio, fluorescent lights, and then a list of other things. But you think the induction motor was his home run?
Well, I say home run when it comes to the relevance to the rest of us on the planet Earth. Because if you consider at this time, 80% of the planet runs on alternating current.
True.
There are very few places you can go now where you have to bring a DC adapter when you travel.
Without Tesla, Edison wouldn't have done what he did, right?
Actually, when Tesla came to the United States at the age of 28, and it was around 84.
Okay.
He came with the intention of coming in to meet Edison. He really kind of viewed Edison as kind of a god of the electrical engineering
community. Really? So he wanted to meet him?
No, he revered him. He was actually afraid to meet him because he didn't think himself of the same stature and caliber as Edison until he finally met him and worked with him. And that's where the schism happened between Edison and Tesla. And part of the problem was that Edison was one of those trial and error kind of guys. He didn't have a formal education. And so his idea of inventing and developing was, let's go into the lab and bang our head against the wall night and day, night and day.
Right.
Tesla, on the other hand, was more of an intuitive engineer, and he was classically educated. So as a result, they didn't kind of groove together in the beginning. And then the thing that really tore him apart, and this was going to become a theme of Tesla's life for the rest of his life, and it was money. Because Tesla went to Edison and said, hey, I have an idea for this induction motor, this alternating current. And Edison's like, you're out of your mind. I don't want to talk about it.
Oh, and I could see what happened.
What happened was is Tesla was not daunted in his relationship with Edison at that point.
Uh-huh.
What he wanted to do is prove to Edison that he was a man about business.
Right.
And so he offered to take all of Edison's direct current engines and get 25% more efficiency out of them.
And what Edison do?
Edison said, you know what, if you could do that in this certain amount of time, I'll give you $50,000.
And
not only did Nikola Tesla get it in the time frames that were established by Edison, but he got more than a 20% increase in the yield of these direct current motors, which Tesla didn't even really believe in.
Did Edison give him the money?
Nope.
He stiffed them?
As a matter of fact, the irony of it is that, well, I don't know if it's irony or not, but he says to Tesla, and this is a quote, that was just a joke. And when you've been here in America long enough, you'll understand American jokes.
Oh.
So he kind of tried to play on that you're a dumb immigrant angle. And a lot of Eastern Europeans were treated kind of heavy-handedly that way.
Mm-hmm.
With stupid. I mean, I'm Polish, and so you know how we got it when we came to the U.S. it wasn't 30 seconds after he said that Tesla resigned.
So, but they were working hand in hand.
And the kind of the joke of it is that Tesla and Edison held one great quality in common, and that was they were both workaholics. They both got 2 to 3 hours of sleep a night. The rest of the time, they were in the lab.
Edison was a genius in his own way.
Edison was kind of the working man's genius.
Yes.
Edison was the kind of guy that would go out, look at a problem, and then put this here, put that there, let's try it again, and he would work the problem out.
And he was an opportunist.
He was an opportunist, and he was a guerrilla capitalist with very, very few morals.
Right.
He was definitely looking to do the same thing any of the other robber barons did. He wanted to create a monopoly situation where he controlled all of basically power production at the time in New York and then eventually across the United States. And that was indicative of him with everything he did, including the film business, which is what pushed the film industry out west.
Well, that's true.
Because
he made it easier for every
single bit of action. Every single filmmaker had to pay him a royalty because they were using his cameras.
Well, he sounds like a little like a, you know, entrepreneurial guy. He had a better idea. It's almost like Bill Gates with all these Windows applications. I mean, the guy was smart enough to invent it. He should be paid for it, right?
The only problem with the comparison between Edison and Gates is that Edison went as far as to kind of get into that mafioso use of muscle situations.
Did he really?
Yeah, he crashed and burned a couple of movie sets.
You mean he just hired some goons to do it?
Hired thugs. They went in, they busted the place up, and said, you should pay your dues to who you got money going to.
All right. Did he ever rough Tesla up?
No. Tesla was never really a victim of any type of physical violence that I'm aware of, that I was ever able to extrapolate from any of the literature.
Okay. So he just broke ranks with Edison and went on his own way?
Right. As a matter of fact, he left Edison rather quickly. And, I mean, we're talking in a matter of weeks. One of the most brilliant and gifted men of this century was digging ditches to stay alive for a dollar a day.
Oh, my God. The Tesla coil transformer was used, I believe, in the Philadelphia experiment, where they tried to make a Navy ship disappear.
Project Rainbow.
Yep. And I don't know if it was successful or not. We've had some wild guests on this program before, Mark, that talked about what went wrong but his technology was there. And also, I do have to, with so much to talk with you about with Tesla today, but I do want to ask you about what happened to those scientific papers that vanished from his room. What do you think happened?
Here starts the conspiracy. And I say it's a conspiracy because a conspiracy is merely a group of people in some sort of position of power using that power to prevent or force somebody else to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And we are almost positive that the people that absconded with Tesla's materials were either with the FBI or the Central Intelligence Agency or the agency that became the Central Intelligence Agency, which would probably be the OSS.
All right, so he's living in this hotel, New Yorker. First of all, why isn't he living in a house or something, or is this not unusual at the time?
Well, the thing about Tesla is as great of an engineering and an engineering genius and a genius of physics, he wasn't a very good businessman like so many other creative people.
Okay.
And he actually, because of his good nature, basically tore up a contract between him and George Westinghouse to help George Westinghouse stave off J.P. Morgan in a takeover. Because J.P. Morgan wanted to take over the Westinghouse company, just like GE had taken over Edison's company.
Okay.
And Nikola Tesla was owed a great deal of money by Westinghouse for royalties off the alternating current motor. And that financial obligation would have left him vulnerable to takeover.
So
in just a show of goodwill and a show of friendship and loyalty, he said, yeah, tore up the contract, said, you don't owe me. But again,
it could have been worth a fortune.
Well, his patents alone, the ones that he sold to Westinghouse, he sold them for $60,000, of which...
Which was big money in those days.
Yeah, well, if you consider the rate of inflation compared to what it is today.
And he just basically tore up the note?
He tore up the note for the royalties. And the thing is the initial cash that was given to him by Westinghouse, which was around $60,000, more than 70% of that went into build his infamous Grand Street Laboratory in New York.
Yeah, he put a lot of it right back in again.
Right back in.
Okay, so anyways, he's living in this hotel. He's got all his papers and documents up there, right, in this room?
Well, what papers and documents he kept, he was infamous for memorizing things and not keeping documents.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
He did keep notes, and when he was working, he had an assistant, actually. This is kind of a funny anecdote. He had an assistant that was very perturbed by the fact that Tesla didn't keep notes. And Tesla would work himself into these into almost stupors, you know, fugue states where he'd black out.
And nobody would know what to do.
Well, he'd become so fatigued from working from so many hours. And so he had an assistant who took it upon himself to go down and file patents on behalf of Tesla. Because Tesla wouldn't file the patents sometimes.
All right. So they just looking out for Tesla had to do this.
Yeah. And the thing is I think some of these assistants, whether they be well-intended or not, ended up causing what would inevitably be the end of Tesla as a preeminent force in the engineering community because he had, from the very beginning, started talking about free energy. Because later on in his life at the Montauk Project up on Long Island, he was talking about broadcasting free energy to people. And, you know, I got back to J.P. Morgan, and he shut him down. Because J.P. Morgan, for a time, was a very powerful financier behind Tesla's work.
Let's talk about that when we come back in a moment, Mark. And also let's talk about the death ray because the current beam weapon program indeed could be originated from Tesla's death ray technologies. And let me ask you when we come back why Tesla, a man, good-hearted man, would even consider conceiving a death ray. What was the purpose? We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, the clock is going to tick now for the end of Perfect Possession. I don't have the end date, but I know it's ticking. Perfect Possession, of course. It's on exorcisms. Art Bell's interview with the late Father Malachi Martin. Available to you when you subscribe or renew your After Dark newsletter. Couple ways you can obtain the CD, which, quite frankly, is worth equally that of the newsletter. Call 1-888-727-5505. 1-888-727-5505. Or go online at coast2to.com. Tesla claimed of having invented a death ray capable of destroying 10,000 enemy planes at a distance of 250 miles. In 1934, Time magazine wrote an article about Tesla's ray, saying, "Last week, Dr. Tesla announced a combination of four inventions which would make war unthinkable. One of them was a beam that, according to Tesla, would drop an army in its tracks, bring down squadrons of airplanes 250 miles away." And then he went on to talk about some of the things that he would do. Do you think Tesla was trying to avoid war, Mark? That's why he was coming up with these ideas?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, Tesla inherited a loathing of war, and he inherited that specifically from his father, and I think that kind of comes with the territory that they grew up in.
So his plan then is not to create war, but to stop it.
I think this is what you could call the precursors to the concept of MAD, mutually assured destruction.
Mm-hmm.
If our gun is so big that it will wipe you out and your gun is so big that it will wipe us out, we'd both be fools to get into it with each other.
This death ray, is it a laser or was it something else?
I guess you have to kind of step backwards to kind of get an idea where he's coming from.
Okay.
His first attempts at projecting electricity would probably be the Colorado Springs days.
Tell me about that.
Nikola Tesla realized that he couldn't do what he wanted to do in New York City. And he had got some financial support to move out to Colorado Springs area. And in between the late 1890s, he erected a tower. And the whole purpose of this tower was to send a massive charge of electricity into the ground with the intent of transmitting electricity to another point where it could be used.
Okay.
And what he got back was, what happened was, is he put somewhere near 10 million volts of electricity into the ground. And according to his estimations and the estimations of the people that were there, that charge of energy traveled through the earth and rebounded back, and resulted in what was possibly the largest example of man-made lightning ever.
Oh, okay.
To the point where there were blue auras surrounding all the metallic objects. In the town of Colorado Springs, you had people walking by fire hydrants and being electrocuted.
Oh my! The whole place was static.
The whole place was lit up, and I think that's what really got it in his head that he could transmit, because before he believed that there was a limit to the amount of electricity he could both draw and transmit. From this individual experiment, I think he got the idea that there was no limit to what he could do.
So he wasn't really thinking of death ray. He somehow stumbled into it.
Well, yeah, he stumbled into the concept of transmitting electricity, and the concept of the death ray actually did approach world powers right before the outbreak of World War II. And they were the Allied powers. He was no friend of the Nazis by any stroke of the imagination.
Right, right.
But he went to the U.S., he went to the English, he went to the French, and said, "I have this thing that will avert war." And of all the Allied powers, the only people that would give him an ear were, well, you guessed it, the Soviet Union.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So,
were they building this death ray with him?
He received payments from the Soviet Union for some consulting and for some design specs. From that point on, I haven't been able to find any specific involvement with their construction. I do know that they went at least 2 years into the program because he got paid around 2 years after he first introduced the concept to him.
Do you think this concept would have worked had he lived?
Well, the thing about it is I think we have evidence that it did work.
Because that's what they're after. They were after those papers. There's no doubt about it in my mind now.
Well, if you look at specific events, in 1901, Tesla, now under the financing of J.P. Morgan, established the Wardenclyffe Research Facility in Long Island.
Okay.
And it was at Wardenclyffe that he started building this massive edifice, this massive tower. And originally he had asked J.P. Morgan for like $1 million, which again back then was an astronomical amount.
You mean to build the tower?
To fund the whole project.
Okay.
He only gave him $150,000. So the project, I think, was kind of doomed to begin with because I think he was reasonable in assuming how much money he would need.
Right, underfunded.
Right. And so J.P. Morgan started getting worried about this project because it was escalating. And then Tesla comes to him and says, well, I have this idea to transmit electricity to whoever wants it pretty much free of charge.
For free,
Well, that's when J.P. Morgan pulled out. Well, some years later, in 1908, supposedly, and I've read some documents that support this, and I've read some that argue it, but he returned to Montauk, to the Warren Cliff research facility. Mm-hmm. Actually, he was accompanied by a fellow by the name of George Scherf, I think that's how they pronounce his name. And supposedly, now this, mind you, you think of the dates here, this was June 30th, 1908. What other event happened in 1908 of magnificent proportion?
Is that Tunguska?
Tunguska got blasted.
Yep, Siberia.
And that's the same day that he purportedly tried to shoot an electronic beam to the tundra where somebody was making a trip to the Arctic Circle, and he wanted to use them as a reference point to say, yeah, we saw this.
We saw this, exactly.
But he ended up overshooting and undercalculating the actual strength of this transmission, and some believe that's what happened.
Something...
They never found any physical evidence of a meteorite or a...
No, they never did.
They never did, so it's plausible.
Well, it is ironic that it would happen at the same time that he was turning on this machine.
It would lead one to believe.
And aiming it out there.
Yeah, it was in the same general direction. And if you, I mean, I'm sure if somebody went out there and shot the azimuth and actually took the time to plot it, you might be surprised at how close it lines up if you consider, you know, if you consider on a map.
So he was, he's dealing then with two things almost simultaneously. I mean, he's working on trying to get free energy out of the atmosphere, I guess, right?
Yeah.
And then, of course, he works later on with his death ray technology. But again, we're using what's out there in the atmosphere. We're using this power in the universe that he somehow was aware of.
You know, it's funny you mention that, too, because I was listening earlier and you were talking to somebody about HARP.
Yes.
And about the use of HARP to affect the atmosphere. And some people have said, well, maybe Tesla was involved with it. Well, the HARP project, as we know it, which is the high-frequency active auroral research program, HARP, is based on research that was done in 1958 under the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA. And there was a project called Project Seesaw.
Seesaw.
And Project Seesaw was a specific answer to the potential of Soviet buildup of particle beam weapons. They abandoned it after like 3 years and $30 million. Well, at least that's what they said to Congress and to the American people.
See, it probably went black ops. It went undercover. Got to have.
We have HARP now, and we also see some remnants of Seesaw in the 1970 Strategic Defense Initiative.
In anything you looked at, Mark, did Tesla also play around with weather manipulation at all?
Tesla didn't he didn't himself manipulate the weather, but he did postulate that it was possible, say, to superheat a certain position in the night sky and give the same effect as you would see with aurora borealis, basically lighting the night sky for, you know, I guess a baseball game.
Yeah.
But he did mention, or he did say, or he did state in some of his work that weather manipulation was a possibility. He also stated things like time travel were possible, and when we found out through our research that he was one of the initial lead engineers on Project Rainbow, a.k.a. the Philadelphia Experience, things started coming together.
All right. Let's talk, if we can, like, because he started this first chronologically,
right,
about his push to get this free energy device. So he builds this tower. J.P. Morgan, who's supposed to fund it, basically underfunds it. And why does Morgan back out?
I think Morgan backs up because from the very beginning, he had suspicions that Tesla was kind of moving in this.
Did Morgan have his eyes on making money with electricity and energy?
To be honest, I think this, and this is my opinion, and I'm sure there's somebody going to argue this opinion with me, but it's my opinion that J.P. Morgan got him in a situation where he could get to a certain point, then he could say, sorry.
On purpose.
On purpose. Give him the boot and get somebody else in there that could reverse engineer it or finish the project without them having the same ideology as Tesla.
I see. And he might have had that guy, that scientist, already in the wings.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's not something that we couldn't expect from J.P. Morgan. He was definitely a power-hungry man, by his own admission.
It seems like in Tesla's entire life, somebody was always out to screw him up.
I think what it was is everybody was looking to make a buck off of him.
Right.
Nobody really gave a rat's behind what happened to him.
Yeah.
In the long run, I think he was always viewed as this really cool, really bright, expendable commodity.
Okay, so Morgan backs out. He's got this tower, what, partially finished? I mean, what happened to it?
Well, the official pulling of the plug happened in 1905.
Okay.
And then he went back in 1908, according to certain records, and went ahead and did his little thing, which, after he did and realized what had happened in Siberia, said, we need to take this down now, because I think he realized at that point the magnitude of destructive power of what he was doing. And if you think about it, if you look at what happened to Siberia, that impact dwarfs any nuclear detonation that we have ever done.
Oh, it was huge. Absolutely huge.
I mean,
scorched everything.
It makes Bikini Atoll look like summer camp.
Yes. All right. Now, at what point did he start working with Westinghouse?
Well, actually, Westinghouse was way back in the beginning.
Before Morgan?
Oh, yeah, long before.
Oh, okay.
Westinghouse was actually, for who he was and what he was, Westinghouse was probably the only real friend in the industry that Tesla ever had, because when he went to Tesla about the money situation, he didn't say, I'm not going to pay you. He asked, please help me so I can survive. So it was more of a plea for help. But when Tesla got to New York, and then he had his falling out with Edison, he ended up getting some money, and I won't even call it money. He got some work designing super efficient arc lighting for a group of guys that, instead of paying him cash, paid him with stock options, and those options ended up being worthless. So these guys got really great arc lighting out of Tesla without giving him a penny.
Typical, I guess.
I guess these things happened in that time in New York, because that was the center of industry.
Tesla needed a business manager.
Yeah. He would have fared well with that.
Yeah. I mean, all he should have done was invent and worry about it, let the business manager cut the deals.
Right. Well, and it was right after this bad deal with these guys doing the arc lights that he went back to digging ditches. And he ended up, A.K. Brown, a guy that worked for Western Union, came to him because he was familiar with him, and he said, you know, you don't belong out here doing this manual work. And so he helped Tesla come up with the money to fund the Grand Street Laboratory. And then later on, Westinghouse came in and purchased the AC motor patents. That's where the $60,000 came from.
Now, but was it at this laboratory, though, that Tesla was coming up with ideas for radio and robotics and things like that?
Well, the radio thing is actually very interesting, because radio was kind of an accidental discovery. And this is probably one of the few things that Tesla wasn't the very first man out of the gate with.
Right.
And what had happened was, is he had been looking at some of the works of mathematical models created by a fellow by the name of James Maxwell over in England, and some of the experimentations based on those mathematical models from a German guy by the name of Heinrich Hertz. These two guys together had proved that basically light was electromagnetic radiation, or another form of electricity. And that was the impetus for Tesla to create the Tesla coil. Because by this time, he realized that he wasn't going to be able to do some of the greater things with electricity that he wanted to do with the lower frequencies that he had available to him. So his goal was to come up with high-frequency electricity. He initially tried to build AC generators that would work at much higher rates to produce higher cyclical rates, but they would literally come apart.
And while he's doing that, then he stumbles into radio waves.
Well, what happened was he devised the Tesla coil as a way to create hundreds of thousands of cycles of electricity per second. And what he did is he was able to finally physically observe the departure of these radio waves, and that's where he came up with the idea for the radio, long before our friend Marconi.
But he just never knew how to apply this stuff.
Well, this is one of the situations where he actually was harmed by the system, because he filed his original patents for the basic concept of the radio in, I want to say, 1897, which they were approved in 1900, and Marconi never filed a U.S. patent for radio until November of 1900.
Did Marconi steal Tesla's ideas? I mean, did they know each other?
They were familiar with each other's work.
Yeah.
And Tesla's work was finding its way to Europe.
It seems like everybody maximized themselves on Tesla's brain, and they all took little pieces of it. Marconi, Edison, all of them.
The thing about Marconi, too, is he was a real pompous fellow. He was kind of Italian nobility, so he came from a family of money, and he kind of had that I'm entitled demeanor.
Mm-hmm.
And when one of his assistants said, you must be really upset about the fact that he's, you know, doing this, he's like, oh, let Marconi do what he's doing. He's doing what he's doing with 17 of my patents. So Tesla always kind of had a...
But it didn't bother him. He didn't care.
It didn't bother him until Marconi won the Nobel.
Yes.
And that sent Tesla over the edge.
Literally?
There was a point where he suffered a massive breakdown, and I'm not exactly sure what the exact time frames are, but it is mentioned in several writings. He did eventually fall into a state of mental decay. I mean, aside from the neuroses that he already that he demonstrated around the few friends that he had.
Didn't Tesla go to court to fight some of this?
Well, Tesla initially started to fight the Marconi thing. But what happened was is that Marconi had a lot of money and Tesla didn't. And so even as it is today, money wins in court.
So he squeezed him.
Which is kind of sad, too, because in 1943, in October of 43, the U.S. Supreme Court, and this is after, this is either right before or right after he died, the U.S. Supreme Court reinstated Tesla's patents over Marconi. And we all want to kind of stand up and say hooray for the Supreme Court, but they didn't do it for Tesla. They did it to protect U.S. interests because Marconi was suing the U.S. government because he said that the U.S. government violated some of his patents during World War One.
Well, all the things that Tesla had been coming up with at the time, and there's no question, the guy was genius, and you know, they grab his papers. Who knows where they are today? Do you think we have this beam weapon technology today?
Yes, I do.
Well, how come we're not using it?
Who's to say we're not?
Well, that's true.
I mean, like you said, you know, like you were talking about earlier, who's to say that some of these weather anomalies aren't HARP? Who's to say some of these intense and bizarre earthquakes in places like Pakistan aren't some of the research Tesla did in ultra-low frequency?
Well, I mean, wasn't he also trying to, like, resonate buildings and stuff, and he was working with vibrations and everything like that?
That's really super dark, deep Tesla. As a matter of fact, the movie that we wrote specifically talks about some of these even more fringe ideas that he believed that he could find out what the resonance and the rhythm pattern of every piece of matter around him was. And theoretically, if that was the case, he could materialize or dematerialize those things.
Well, when we come back at the top of the hour, Mark, let's talk a little bit about this film, The Tesla Conspiracy, because, as you said, once the papers got stolen, hence the conspiracy began. And how many people do you think were involved with him in terms of selling out? What do you think?
Just about everybody. Just about everybody that ever came into contact with him sold him down the river.
You think they all made money off him?
I think anybody – well, and I'm going to disclaim Westinghouse. I think Westinghouse tried to be a good guy, but in the end, it was still about the money.
All right. Well, when we come back with our guest, of course, Mark DeMuha, we'll talk about the life of Nikola Tesla and, again, this free electricity, this death ray, which I'm just fascinated with the way this thing works. I mean, he really wanted to knock down 10,000 enemy planes at one time. And then, of course, the movie. The Tesla Conspiracy. When can we see it? We'll be right back. I may have a cameo in the Tesla Conspiracy. You never know. In a moment, our guest will be Mark DeMuha, and we'll be back with him as we talk about the life of this brilliant person, Nikola Tesla, on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our guest, Mark DeMuha. Mark, the energy device that Tesla was working on, why did it finally just die and go away, and why didn't he keep trying to push it? What happened? Was it all because he couldn't get the money to do it?
I think specifically talking about the device that he was using to directly tap what he called etheric energy. Was an incredible danger to the financial infrastructure of the J.P. Morgans and the other robber barons. You had oil magnates. You had people that had a lot of money invested in the current power structure, meaning literally energy. And if every home in America could directly draw the electricity they need to run their own household from a device that gave no profit to these men, it would ruin their concept of empire.
Well, if it ruined their concept of empire, I'm sure they'd try to figure out a way to do it, but you're right. And how would this thing have been designed? I mean, would we all have had little receivers, let's say in our homes, apartments, wherever we may be, and this just energy would constantly be shooting out?
Well, I think the best way to explain it would be to explain his Pierce Arrow car experiment.
All right.
And with the Pierce Arrow car experiment, which was in 1931, he took, and from what we've read with the blessing of the Pierce Arrow Corporation, took a car and took its internal combustion engine out and replaced it with an 80 horsepower alternating current motor, which is not a horribly large motor. It's only, I think, 3 foot long, couple foot wide.
Mm-hmm, right.
And when he showed up to do this experiment, he had with him...
And this is 1931, right?
1931. So we're talking, you know, almost prehistoric.
you're right.
Prehistoric compared to the technology we have today. But he shows up with his... And some of the stories conflict on this. Who was his nephew, who wasn't? His nephew, Peter Savo, was there. And some reports have that there was an aeronautical engineer who was friends with Savo. His name was Derek Aller. And purportedly, Nikola Tesla shows up with a briefcase or a some sort of suitcase and pulls out a little black box, which has been referred to over and over again in so many different writings about Tesla.
Mm-hmm.
And this little black box had an array of unusual-looking vacuum tubes, which none of these men had ever seen before. They were indeed vacuum tubes, they knew that much, on a strangely configured circuit board, and it had two little metal push rods on it, or some sort of rods, which after Nikola attached it to a fitting on the dashboard, he pushed these rods in and said, the vehicle is now powered.
And then?
And there was an antenna, some sort of antenna that was attached to the back of the vehicle that was cabled into this fitting where the box was, and he gave the key to his nephew, Peter Savo, and says, go ahead and start the car. Well, Peter turned the key, and there was no turning over of the motor, as we would expect in an internal combustion vehicle. And then he applied his foot to the accelerator, and away they went.
Off they went.
Off they went, sometimes upwards of 90 miles an hour.
Oh, my God. Now, for how long, did they say?
They ran the car around the area that they ran in and out of the city for upwards of 9 days, regularly breaking speeds of 90 miles an hour.
That's incredible.
It's beyond incredible.
Look at what this would have done, Mark, to everything today. It would have changed socioeconomics. It would have changed worldwide politics. It could have minimized some of the problems we have today.
If you think about the disaster with Hurricane Katrina and how quickly a centralized power distribution source was taken out by a natural disaster, if everybody in the New Orleans area had been on an independent power source that was off of a grid, the amount of inconvenience suffered by the people that lived there and the rescuers and all of the people that were there would have been minimalized by half.
All right, so that was 1931, 74 years ago. 74 years ago. Somebody today could have come up with this technology by now. If this guy had it, and maybe it wasn't really perfected, but it sounds like it was, 74 years ago, this could have been a home run.
You know, it's funny you said that because as I looked into Tesla and as I searched the internet and as I searched documents and as I looked through anything I could find on him and this radiant energy tapping device, I started coming across articles and bulletin boards where people mentioned, oh, I knew a guy who knew a guy who had done the same thing as Tesla. But when he got it to work, these guys showed up, men in black, if you will. They basically said, don't do it again, took his stuff, and he mysteriously disappeared a year later. His house burnt down. And initially I thought, you know, this is just people, you know, being hypersensitive, active imaginations. But I started seeing a pattern in many different regions of the United States, and it's almost like Bigfoot sightings, you know. The only thing that ties all of this together is the technology.
And it seems like, Mark, just talking with you and reviewing some of the things that Tesla has done, that this design that he had for free energy, the death ray, and all these other ideas all just seem to stem around what he believed could be pulled out of the atmosphere pulled out of the universe, the cosmos, right?
Well, what Tesla believed was is that ambient energy entered to the Earth, enters the Earth's atmosphere. We'll take sunlight as an example, as one of those things. He believed, well, he was always at odds with Einstein about the concept of energy. Einstein believed that energy existed as a result of mass. Tesla believed it lived within the spaces between mass, between the spaces in an atom. And he postulated that this energy exists in our very atmosphere and that it flows around us like a river. And all one had to do is find a way to, I guess you could say, put a scoop out and pick it up.
Why is this guy's life appear to be a mystery?
I suspect that it's a mystery because I guess like anything, anytime something is so either advanced or so strange or so different, it scares the status quo. And the status quo at the time looked at him as a threat to what they were trying to build.
All right, the Pierce Arrow car, once he did his experiment in 1931, I mean, and he walks away with his little kit. I mean, didn't anybody say, give it to us, let's do it right now? I mean, what happened?
There, I've found fleeting reports of investors that had initially showed some interest in this and then mysteriously, all of a sudden, weren't interested anymore. And why somebody would become disinterested in something that would have been the most revolutionary engineering advancement in human history up to that point.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
You're talking about something, like you said, would change the entire eco-sociological state that we live in. Everything that we work for nowadays wouldn't even be here. I mean, I go to work to pay the power bill. I go to work to buy gasoline to get to work. None of those things would be relevant.
I mean, we had a call during my open lines tonight from an independent truck driver who's struggling. He may go out of business. Diesel fuel at an all-time high. He can't afford it. I mean, here are systems that mankind would benefit from. It's all about the dollar, and it's all about squeezing the guy in the middle. And, you know, you got a guy like Tesla who's ready to do what he does. Now I got to ask you, based on just the work of the Tesla Conspiracy, the movie you're working on, mm-hmm. Are we sure that the old guy didn't just die at 87 from old age, or was he done in? Did somebody kill him and steal his documents, and off they went?
You know, I suspect that the people that were around Tesla back then were no smarter or no dumber than the people of that same character today. And I think they looked at Tesla, being that he was kind of a emotionally softer and fragile person,
mm-hmm.
that they were able to lean on him enough that he would just
melt away,
vanish on his own.
He was like putty.
Well, after he had his breakdown, his big thing was going to the park and feeding birds. He would regularly bring pigeons home. And that became kind of the mainstay of his life, was caring for disabled birds from Central Park.
Even at that age of 87, did he stop? At what point did he stop thinking and inventing?
Well, the last known patent that he filed was at the age of 72. Now, this is really going to blow you away, George. At the age of 72, he filed patent number 6,555,114. And it was what he called the apparatus for aerial transportation.
Oh, really?
Sounds pretty neat. And you say, well, what happened to that? Well, if you look in the military today, they have aircraft called vertical short takeoff landing, or VSTOL vehicles. Or some people call them the tilt rotor aircraft.
Now, was he thinking of doing this in a anti-gravity way?
Yeah, it's kind of funny, too, because actually it was based on some of the basic laws of aerodynamics. But what he was doing is combining the mechanics of a helicopter and an airplane. And what he wanted it to do is to be a small enough device that it could weigh under 1,000 pounds, and it could be used to transport people around the city. It could be used to move cargo, whatever. And I don't think he ever anticipated it becoming a military application like it has become today in our modern-day military, which it is where it's at now.
What a mind. Well, I mean, he must have been the reincarnated Da Vinci or somebody.
Well, I definitely think that they were kindred souls. I think Da Vinci had less working against him than Tesla ever did.
What's going on with your movie now?
Well, you know, that's interesting you ask. For the longest time, let me back up a little bit. When we decided that we wanted to do a movie, and I went to Mike, we were kind of toiling over what topic matter we should get into, and he's a really big, Mike Finley, he is a really big Tesla fan. And ironically enough, I was this really big coast-to-coast AM fan. I started listening back in 97 when I was working as a bail bondsman. So, I mean, I've been around with coast-to-coast since, you know, well, 97 is a long time ago.
So coast might have been the impetus for you to come up with the idea.
Well, and that's, it's what's funny is, Mike said, well, why don't we do a movie about Nikola Tesla? And so I was thinking a period piece, you know. We'll do something from the 1920s that'll be really neat. And so we started doing research. And we put up a provisional website for the film. And then I started getting letters from people, and I was talking about people sharing events in their life that would make you think something is going on. And I got a letter from a lady, and I changed her name because the Lord knows I wouldn't want to get anybody in trouble, but she shared with me an experience about her father, who was worked in aerospace back in the 70s, and she was a teen, and how he was a big, I think she referred to him as a Tesla nut. And he would spend a lot of his weekend and evening hours working on what he thought was Tesla technology.
Right.
And as a result of what he was doing, he was approached by the management of the particular aerospace company that he was working for at the time because he was talking about it with his friends, kind of, you know, in an innocent sort of I don't realize what I'm talking about way. And management came to him and said, you will stop talking about this. He started getting phone calls. She said her father became quiet, depressed, withdrawn. And within a matter of months, he was killed in an automobile accident.
Oh, my.
And now I'm reading this email, and I'm thinking, come on.
There's another conspiracy all by itself.
Well, her mother filed a life insurance claim against her father's life insurance. And the company that assigned an adjuster, and the adjuster said, I'm having a problem processing this claim because every time I try to get any information on the accident, I'm basically told to go pound sand.
Which is unusual, right?
It's very unusual because usually local law enforcement are very cooperative with insurance adjusters. But the thing was, is the feds had gotten involved with the investigation because they said he had been involved with sensitive material as an aerospace engineer, and they just wanted to make sure nothing was going on. Wink, wink. And she said, you know, I hadn't thought about it for years, and then she came across the website and saw what we were doing, you know, doing a movie about Tesla, and she sent me this email. And right there it hit me. Right there it hit me, George, because I knew for the longest time that things are going on around us that we don't see. And I spent a good portion of my adult life in the Army. And I saw a lot of things that you don't typically see as a civilian. And I know you were a Navy man.
Yeah.
You saw things that you don't typically see as a civilian. And so it wasn't so far out of the scope of reality for me. So I started kind of poking and prodding. And the more I looked and the more Mike looked, the more we realized there was something going on. And it started to make me mad. If you want to honestly know what it boils down to, it started to make me mad that somebody or some people or some group of people are going to tell me, you got to pay $3 a gallon for gasoline.
And they're still doing it, Mark.
And they're doing it. And all along, I could have been driving a Pierce Arrow with a free energy electric engine in it, and I could have made my life so much easier going to school. You know, I have an hour commute. I spend hundreds of dollars a week on gas. But then it went deeper than that, George. Then I started hearing about heating oil prices. Heating oil prices are going to go through the roof. And I thought about old people in Wisconsin who are living on Social Security checks who may not be able to heat their homes.
And he was prepared to provide free energy to them.
He was in a position, George, to have ended all of this mess.
Well, and you know, Mark, I'm not opposed for people to pay some dollars for whatever they receive. I just don't think they should be gouged. I mean, I think people on fixed income, you know, they're talking about natural gas, for example, for people heating their homes this winter, going up by 30 to 40%. People on fixed incomes getting a small Social Security check, how can they get by on this? You know, but, you know, I'm not opposed, and I'm sure most people aren't opposed to paying a fee for usage of electricity and for gas and gasoline, but this gouging, this constant, let's get them. I mean, eventually the bubble's going to bust when they keep doing this to people. Tesla knew that he could provide something to people, and he didn't want to make money doing it.
The thing about that, too, George, is, like you said, the bubble's going to burst. The energy providers in this country are shooting themselves in the feet because somebody somewhere, if not in the United States of America, somewhere else is going to figure this out.
Well, then, now that's what I want to ask you. I mean, here we are talking about a guy some 70, 80 years ago, maybe more, who has these brilliant ideas. Now, you know how technology grows and how fast things are. I can't believe that somebody, some genius somewhere, hasn't been able to perfect some of these other ideas. I'm not talking about the radio and the alternating current and things that we have, you know, done a good job with. But these other ideas that he had, they've got to have been invented by now. They're just not using them for us.
Well, you know, part of the reason why the storyline that we wrote took the direction that it did and why we went, obviously the movie is a fictional story based on technology and based on conspiracy that historically existed. But the reason the story took the direction that it did is because I came into contact with a young man who was going to MIT. And at MIT, he was showing a great deal of genius and a great deal of prospect. And he was also showing a lot of interest in alternative energy. And out of the blue, for no reason at all, he was approached by the NSA. And they said, hey, you got to come work for us. And he said, hey, I don't want to work for you. Thanks anyways. And they said, no, you really should come work for us. And he said, no, I'm not interested. He all of a sudden gets kicked out of MIT for no apparent reason.
He should have played ball, I guess, huh?
Well, and I think what it is now is the United States of America back during the time of Nikola Tesla was ran by oilmen and bankers.
Well, it still is.
Well, and now you have an amalgamation of those entities with a very super powerful government.
Man. And you know, you've listened to this program. You've heard of us mention Dr. Eugene Maloff.
Of course.
Working on alternative energy. I mean, here's a person who gets killed. They still haven't officially solved that murder yet. They talk about it as being a petty robbery. I don't think so. There's a bigger picture here. When we come back, I'm going to open up Fast Blasts. I'll take those questions right off the computer for our guest, Mark DeMuha. And then next hour, we'll open up the phone lines and give you an opportunity to talk with him about a very remarkable man who has fascinated me for many years, Nikola Tesla. I just wish some of these other things he had invented had come to fruition. Or maybe they have. Okay, phone calls at the top of the hour. Fast Blast questions right now. You've been up to the website yet? It's called TeslaConspiracy.com, linked up with Mark's name right now at CoastToCoastAM.com. By the way, for Streamlink members, tomorrow will be our chat. Lex was taking some time off, so we pushed it back a week. But it's tomorrow, 8 o'clock Pacific time, 11 o'clock Eastern time. I'll be there. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our guest, Mark DeMuha, and your Fast Blast questions. As a matter of fact, Dave from Alabama wants to know, Mark, if you could talk a little bit more about Tesla's work and theories into time travel.
Most of Tesla's work in time travel is very undocumented.
Ah.
And there's a lot of speculation about what he believed. But we know that him and Einstein were on the same page in that they both thought it's a bad thing.
A bad thing, really?
Yeah, especially after the Philadelphia experiment, or I should say the time leading up to the actual disappearance of the USS Eldridge. Tesla had left the project prior to then, and specifically because he had concerns about issues.
Did he know that it was going to happen, that Philadelphia experiment?
I think he suspected.
Okay.
I think he had suspicions, and I think Einstein had suspicions, and they both were vocal enough that they didn't think that time travel was necessarily a good thing, which is funny because there are other, you know, modern-day physicists like Kip Thorne at Caltech that think not only is it plausible, but it could be a good thing.
See, it's ironic that Tesla died right after the Philadelphia experiment.
Yeah, and if there was ever cause for alarm of thinking that maybe there was an attempt on his life, or if they did take him out, that would probably have been the most reasonable time to think. Because now we're getting into government military secrets.
Well, you know, when you talk about the conspiracy of his documents, is it possible that one of his co-workers, you know, even though he was 87 years old, I don't know if he still had co-workers, that they simply went in there and took his papers away?
Actually, he was pretty much isolated by this point.
Did he have family? Was he married? Any kids?
Actually, he had right after the news of his death came out, he had a nephew named Sava Kosanovic, who was a Yugoslavian politician, an up-and-comer in Yugoslavian politics. But he was kind of left-leaning in the eyes of the American government. I think he had some ties to the Communist Party in Europe. And so I think right when the news came out that Tesla had passed away, the powers that be, whether it be the FBI or whoever it was in there quick. And then they used the Alien Property Act to take everything else while his nephew sat and watched. Now, some of those papers did get back to his nephew.
Be careful when you say the Alien Property Act on this show.
Then that is a bit of irony. So some of those papers did get back in the hands of his family, and some of them are actually or were on display in the former Yugoslavia. But some people believe that was the kindling fire for the Soviet Union to start working on Tesla-related technologies, and they were not afraid to get involved with those.
Did Tesla ever know Alexander Graham Bell?
I haven't seen any documentation that he was ever involved with Bell.
Because, let's see, Bell was in Connecticut by 1878. By 1884, long distance was going between Boston and New York City. So it's, Tesla was around.
There's a possibility that they knew each other because they would probably have graced the same type of conferences. But Tesla's emphasis was on wireless communication, which is now a mainstay of American life.
Exactly.
But he really, because Marconi's technology that he, a lot of which he stole from Tesla, was starting to fail. And so Tesla had envisioned a time when all communication, the entire world would basically be a giant radio transmitter and people would be able to communicate through the airwaves.
There's another one from Peter in Pulaski, New York. I wasn't going to say anything, but I believe GE has the missing papers. My father was a security guard with a government clearance, and before he died, he told me he saw an electric car that the batteries did not need to be recharged. Please don't say the rest of my name. I will not. What do you think about that one, Mark?
Well, you know, GE, again, was the company that took over Edison's work. Who are we to say that some of Tesla's work didn't still exist in Edison's labs?
Did the Soviets, to your knowledge, ever perfect Tesla's technology?
Well, we talked about Project Seesaw. We know that at a time they were working on a particle beam weapon, which of course prompted our government to do it. From what we could see, from what I've read, from what I've seen, they didn't. And from the way they look economically now, they're not going to do it anytime soon.
Stephen from Bakersfield, California says, you know what, when I graduated from high school in 82, I never heard the name Tesla the whole time I was going to school. What happened in the last 20 years to cause this man, our 20 years, to finally get some credit for his brilliant accomplishments? Why didn't they do that? I didn't hear much about Tesla in school either.
You know, what's kind of funny is my introduction to the name Tesla was actually that of an 80s rock band.
Yeah,
taken the name of Tesla, and I'm one of those people that whenever I hear anything that doesn't ring, I start looking things up. And my introduction to Tesla was in part as a result of rock and roll music from the early 80s. Sure. And even then, though, it didn't mean anything to me personally because it was just, you know, it's just a guy in history who nobody ever talks about. So he couldn't have been that important, right?
Sherry from Branson, Missouri, who loves to say y'all in her fast blasts, wants to know when the movie will be finished or completed.
Okay. Where we're at right now is we are in what we call a packaging or pre-production phase.
Okay.
We started off with a really large slate of investors that were really excited about the screenplay because the screenplay is solid. And I owe a lot of that to my writing partner, Mike Finley, who did the lion's share of the actual work. But then, kind of like with Tesla and his money, people just like, oh, we can't do it. Why? Well, we just can't do it. So since we've been kind of pushing this as a grassroots movement on the internet and through some other internet communities like MySpace.com, we've had a resurgence in interest, and now we've just been contacted by another slate of investors, and there are several of them. And so once we're in a position where we could be bonded and I could get out of pre-production and actually start burning film, We're hoping no later than spring.
Why don't you get a big Hollywood studio to back this?
You know, we talked to them, and we initially had an offer, a tentative offer, to buy us out. But we started looking at what they had in mind and had planned for the film, and it would have completely gutted everything that we had worked to put into the film. It would have completely gutted the message, and it would have, in my opinion, tarnished the memory of somebody that should be, you know, a living legend.
Well, you got to be careful, too, with ideas. Let me tell you what happened to my dear friend Dr. Morgus. You've heard him on the show before, I'm sure, Mark.
Yeah, yeah.
Wonderful individual, my boyhood idol. He comes to Hollywood years ago with an idea to be a zany professor. And he's got the look, he's got it all, and you know, he's got these huge buck teeth, and you know, some of it he's got, I'm sure, in costume. And he sits down with these Hollywood writers, and they said, "Nah, we're not interested in that, or you. Thank you very much." They kept his notes. He left. He had nothing in writing. He just simply said, "Well, okay, it was a good idea." They went out, and they did the Nutty Professor with Jerry Lewis.
Right.
They took the whole concept, his whole idea, and then they ran with it.
You know, they stole the ideas from a lot of really talented people. Bruce Lee had come up with the concept of a TV show you might remember. It's called Kung Fu.
Yep.
And he'd actually, you know, pitched it in a way that he would star as the lead character. And they said, "We're not interested. Have a nice day." And because he didn't understand intellectual property law, he wasn't in a position to protect himself. And the network stole it from him and put David Carradine in. And they literally just stole it from him. So
wow.
Hollywood is a place that is as vicious as any industry war that I've ever seen. And it's been an eye-opening experience for me coming into it kind of new. I thought I dealt with just about anything you could deal with in the Army.
Welcome to the club, Mark. It's tough out there in Hollywood.
It is. But, you know, I was born and raised here. My daddy was a cop here for 35 years. I kind of got a feel, so I'm not completely dangling in the breeze on my own.
My buddy, Captain Spike Mike from the Fantastic Form, wants to know if you know if one of Tesla's true friends in America, Samuel Clemens, also known as Mark Twain, did they have a great relationship, do you know?
And it's funny he brought up Mark Twain because I was going to mention him earlier, but and then we got off on another topic. Mark Twain was one of the few people that could be said to have been a member of Tesla's inner circle.
He loved the guy, didn't he?
And that is specifically because Tesla, when he was sick with cholera, took up the habit of reading, and he credited the writings of Mark Twain for healing him of his cholera.
Really?
He credited reading Samuel Clemens. He claims, that's what he said. He said reading those books are what raised him out of the bed saved him from death of cholera.
Dave from Ohio wants to know if any place Tesla has written about or talked to people about extraterrestrial life or anything like that. Was he a believer in that? Do you know?
He never, in his autobiography, I don't think he ever mentioned it. And I've never seen anything written anywhere that he mentioned a belief in extraterrestrial life. I suspect that Tesla was enlightened enough that he would not have discounted the possibility of extraterrestrial life. And I think if he had lived to see our day and age, he would have been a believer because I think the evidence, the empirical evidence, is starting to roll in.
Let's talk about some more of the things that he invented, Mark, that we're using every day, like the fluorescent lights and things like that. Can you? What's out there?
As a matter of fact, before I got on the show tonight, I had me a nice bowl of Top Ramen, which I made in my microwave.
He invented that, right?
Well, microwaves are a natural occurrence in the universe. But what Nikola Tesla did was he discovered that they were there, and he discovered how to harness them and to focus them. It is the theories behind his understanding of microwaves that give us a hot bowl of soup on a cold Sunday morning. It is that concept that gives us radio communications between police stations with microwave band or communication with the space shuttle. And you talk about, you know, neon and fluorescent. I mean, lighting in America is completely different. If it wasn't for him, we'd still be using incandescent bulbs that only use 5% of the available energy. That's what Edison gave us.
I mean, so he invents fluorescent lights a long time ago, but we didn't use those for a long, long time, right?
Well, his discovery of fluorescence and neon, and by the way, he's the first person to ever take an X-ray picture.
Really?
First person to ever take an X-ray picture. I had to throw that in because I'm a huge proponent now of shouting Tesla's accomplishments. But yet, most of these things that he discovered were ancillary to other research that he was doing, and he suddenly was like, wow, that's great, back to work, you know? And it was during the time that he came up with the Tesla coil, which I qualify this by saying is the second most important invention that he came up with, and I say that because so many other things stemmed from that. Every time you start your car, you have a coil in there, and that steps up an electrical charge from a smaller one to a bigger one. That's a direct descendant of the Tesla coil.
You know, I'm wondering if the guy ever came up with a computer and didn't get credit for it.
Well, you know, I would not be surprised I wouldn't be surprised if we found out later documents that showed that he had ideas for computation, because he understood the concept of circuitry, and it is the concept of circuitry, the on and off concept, that gave us modern day computation, because all modern day computation is the rapid turning on and off of circuits.
You've heard of Coral Castle in Florida, right?
Yeah.
Edward Leete Scullin. Somehow he moved these huge stones. I think he understood magnetics and in the properties of. I wonder if Tesla ever mentioned him or any relationship with him. I mean, both of them came from Europe, foreign countries.
You know, in the research that I've done, and I promise you, I've read a lot of books on Tesla. I never heard any mention of him. But again, these are guys that ran in the same circles, and you would have to expect that they would all have rubbed elbows at one time, because a lot of these guys would go to Chicago for the World's Fair, where, you know, Nikola Tesla lit the fair with an alternating current motor. Him and Westinghouse created the City of Light, which was a revolution. I mean, people were like, oh, my goodness.
That's great.
That's what won the electricity wars, and that's what got Tesla and Westinghouse the Niagara River Power Project.
You were mentioning earlier the dark side of Tesla, and, you know, we were talking about resonance of buildings and stuff. Why don't you elaborate on what you meant?
Okay. Tesla kind of gained an understanding about resonance in dealing with electricity, and that's how he understood or learned how to direct and focus radio waves. He knew that between certain spectrum, radio waves could be transmitted to a site, and if you could build technology that would allow you to extrapolate the specific information that you're trying to transmit, therefore you have radio-to-radio communication. But he realized when he was in Colorado Springs that the planet Earth, the physical Earth, had a specific vibration pattern to it. And when he tuned his electrical charges into the ground, when he increased or lowered the frequencies, it affected the way that the electricity would move and rebound. From that, he developed an understanding that everything that we see and touch has some sort of resonance or some sort of signature, which probably stems from their atomic makeup. And he started to theorize that if you could tune to the resonance of any particular object, you can affect the actual material makeup of that object.
He could almost create earthquakes, couldn't he, by doing that?
You know, they just did a big movie about that, The Core.
Yeah.
The government using ultra-low frequencies.
Okay, you got it. And it was Tesla technology.
Exactly.
Good point. I love that movie.
There's so many things that happen. I mean, you see movies, you just don't realize.
Maybe that movie was made by the people you had gone to. They stole part of your idea.
It wouldn't shock me, George. It wouldn't shock me at all. But it's just amazing. And, you know, people are pulling free energy out of the sky as we speak. There are ham operators all over America who could attest that they could put up antenna arrays and pull hundreds of watts of electricity out of the atmosphere at night.
Here's a great one you're going to love. David from St. Paul, Minnesota says, Mark Twain attended, as I recall from a story I read, little private parties with Tesla. And Tesla asked him once to try out one of his inventions by standing on it. It was the Tesla coil. But he didn't warn him that it also kind of stirred up the intestines. Twain had to excuse himself and stayed away from the party for a long time.
And you know,
so he had a sense of humor, Mr. Tesla did, huh?
No, and you know, for all of his shortcomings, as we as supposed normal people would assume, he was a person, and he was a person who felt. And again, I go back to, I really think that the death of his brother and his personal feelings of guilt are the kind of what pushed him into that state of permanent neurosis.
Yeah, probably so. And who could blame him?
It's a hard thing.
How come he kept so many of his plans and ideas in his head?
Well, funny that you should ask that. When he was a boy, growing up in Yugoslavia, his father, who was a trained minister, was really big in education, and he used to work with Nikola on his memory specifically, drills and things to help him become better at memorizing, and that developed into a near photographic memory. And when I say photographic, he could literally visualize the images of his designs better than he could even draw them.
Well, why not put, I guess he was so obsessed with people stealing ideas, he kept it in his head.
Well, you know, it's probably the fact that he did that that saved him from complete financial ruin when the Grand Street Laboratory burnt down, because if all of his stuff had been written in books and ledgers and had gone up in smoke in the Grand Street fire, he would have kind of been out on the streets again. He wouldn't have had anywhere to go from. If that had happened to Edison, Edison would have been out of business, because Edison was definitely a guy who had to write everything down.
Man, that's something else. Okay, Mark, I tell you what, next hour, let's open up the phone lines. You ready for that?
Sounds good.
Give everybody an opportunity to talk with you. And there is talk, of course, that Tesla's death rays are also laser beams, special sorts of electromagnetic waves, a special type of light. The white light or daily light, they say, is a mixture of different length of waves. White light is a mixture. And you know what? The guy was a genius. We'll be back in a moment. We'll take your questions next. Fascinating guest with our friend Mark DeMuha right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, two earthquakes hitting near Palm Springs within a couple of hours, a 4 earlier tonight, and now a 4.4 just minutes ago. No reports of any damage or injuries there. Tom, by the way, just fielded a phone call from someone who said she was Edna Pringle, JC's ex. She claims that she has indeed left the compound, is living with a Streamlink member, and is quite happy. And she may call in during one of our open line calls. Speaking of calls, in a moment, your phone calls with our guest, Mark DeMuha, right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Mark DeMuha, our guest, and your many phone calls. Let's go right to the calls now, Mark. You ready?
I sure am.
Let's pick it up by going to west of the Rockies. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, my name's Sean from Palmdale, California.
Hi, Sean. Thanks for calling.
No problem. Mark, it's good to hear from you again. I haven't been able to talk to you in a while. Surprised that I haven't thought about this, but one of my questions to you was on your funding issues. Do you believe that this is a great conspiracy against you to kill your funding? Because I've noticed throughout the 3 years we've been talking about this, your funding has dropped and dropped and dropped, even though you killed budgets and you've switched a couple, I believe you switched a couple of scripts on it and tried to get some more funding. But overall, I mean, I've seen you just struggle with hell with funding for this film. And also, what type of problems do you see when you get into filming this thing?
Well, you know, I'm glad that you asked that, and I think I know who this is. And the thing about the funding is we peddled the screenplay to a lot of people that are prominent in the industry, and the reaction initially was, wow, 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 what a great thing. They read the screenplays. They wrote great coverage. And initially people came to us, and they're like, we want to do this, we want to do this, and then all of a sudden, we can't do it. We have another obligation.
Another conspiracy.
Well, yeah, I'm not building anything in my garage that's going to give anybody free energy. What I am building in my garage is a message to let everybody in America know that they should have something in their garage that could run their house for free. And that's kind of what the caller just asked. You know, we've kind of turned this into a grassroots movement, and come hell or high water, we're going to make this movie. And if it has to be done through, you know, $1.50 contributions through the internet over the next year until we have the money to do it properly, or if an investor that has a lot of backbone that wants to get behind it wants to do it, that's great. But either way, we're going to get it made, because Nikola Tesla deserves to have his story told. He deserves to have his work known, because his work is good for us.
Should find people from Westinghouse. They might do it.
I'd take it.
They might do. Let's go to Wild Card Line. Welcome to the show. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Jesse.
Hi, Jesse.
How are you doing? I'm from Minneapolis, Minnesota. And first off, I want to comment on the weather changes here. It has been quite a warm September and October.
Very strange for Minnesota.
Very strange. It was 65, I believe it came to today.
Gee.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure you'll get your burst of the weather, but it is weird.
It is quite weird. The second thing is that I wanted to talk about is I grew up in Lakeville, Minnesota, and on a lake, Orchard Lake, and a buddy of mine lived on the lake, and I lived just away from it. And he had a neighbor that he claims had a generator that was his next-door neighbor that ran off of its own power the whole time. Now it's basically an open lot. The house has been torn down, and I believe,
Alternating current?
Alternating current, yes. Is this the same thing that Nikola Tesla was talking about?
Well, Nikola Tesla was the arbiter or the inventor of alternating current.
Which we all have in our houses now.
Right. What Nikola did is he took it a step further and showed how you could harness what he called ethereal or etheric energy to run an alternating current generator or a motor.
And again, that's atmosphere. That's energy out of the universe or the atmosphere.
You can view it in Alaska. They call it aurora borealis.
Correct.
Okay.
My question to you is this generator that once it had a jump start and ran off of its own power and created power enough to power the house, is that possible?
Well, according to the people that were around Tesla, was that the black box that he had also needed to be primed, like you're talking about. It had to have a little bit of a battery to kind of give it a push, kind of like if you're siphoning water out of a tank.
Right.
But once that happened, the siphon began, and it would run perpetually on its own, on the power source that it drew from the atmosphere. So theoretically, because obviously none of his work is available for me to look at, theoretically he did it, and that's what we're trying to get back out there.
Okay. I just hope that this the guy who created this generator is one of your listeners.
Well, he's dead.
He's dead.
This
yeah.
is so indicative of so many other.
Yeah, Tesla died in 1943.
No, not Nikola Tesla. This guy who grew up a mile away from me, who actually created this generator that ran off of its own power, and he ran his house for a couple of years on this system.
I think he's dead too.
Well, you know, and George, this story is indicative of hundreds of stories that I've heard time and time
again. And then they fade away.
They disappear. I got an email from a young lady maybe 3 days ago. She forwarded an email about a friend who was tinkering with Tesla technology, and some guys showed up wearing black suits and sunglasses and I guess scared the poop out of him. And a year later, he disappeared mysteriously while camping.
Well, I get it. These people, like Eugene Malov, they die under strange circumstances, or they disappear, and like the case up in Minneapolis in Minnesota, nobody knows.
It's a conspiracy, and it's a conspiracy that centers around. And I'm not just going to say Tesla. I don't want to sound too self-absorbed in my project, but around anything that would take away the massive amounts of revenue that are generated with the current archaic power generation that we have in this country.
Did Tesla realize, though, what the downside could have been with all those electrical currents coming down from the atmosphere all over the place?
I think that Nikola Tesla viewed those as being here already, and that he was creating kind of a symbiotic relationship with them.
I mean, I hate to be in a plane getting zapped by one of those.
Well, you know, what's funny is he had a model for airplanes that would actually fly from power that was generated from a tower away from them, and that energy would be beamed to that individual airplane. And those airplanes could run perpetually with this electricity that's being transmitted from a certain location in the United States.
Let's go west of the Rockies. Welcome to Coast. You are on the air. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah,
hi,
welcome.
This is Jem from Emeryville, California.
Hello, Jem.
Hello. I read a little book about Tesla, And I wanted to know if what I read was true, that he had this kind of passion for pigeons, and he had he would bring home, you know, all the injured pigeons, you know, from New York, and he supposedly had this telepathic bond with this one pure white pigeon, and he could supposedly call it telepathically. It would fly to him from wherever it was in New York, and he was supposed to be at a lecture one time, and they found him in a nearby park covered with pigeons. Is there any truth to any of that?
There is truth about his relationship with the pigeons. As to the telepathic connection between any particular one, I've never read anything about that. But I think we discussed it earlier, George, after he had his breakdown, a lot of energy was devoted to those pigeons, and he even went as far as to order special seeds from, I guess it would be the room service at the hotel that he lived in.
For the pigeons.
For the pigeons that were wounded that he kept.
Basically, that's a true story there, Jim.
Maybe that was sanity, you know? It's like, you know.
It was his therapy.
He claimed on several occasions to have telepathic powers. And it's not something that he walked around and broadcasted, but those that were close to him knew that he specifically believed that he received some of his knowledge. These flashes were kind of telepathic, precursors.
Uh-huh.
So the pigeon story is true. He was a big fan of pigeons, and he did bring them to his hotel room, and he did care for wounded ones.
Well, there was supposedly a pure white one that he was so bonded with that he would just think of it and it would come.
I got to believe that's true, too, because you seem to know a lot about this part of his life.
Oh, I love pigeons.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate it. Whatever happened to the Pierce Arrow car, by the way?
Nobody knows.
Did they ever produce any of them?
Well, the Pierce Arrow company was eventually bought out, and I can't remember off the top of my head the name of the company, but that company subsequently went out of business anyways.
So they squashed that one.
Yeah, and which is sad, because if the Pierce Arrow company, again, had wanted to follow through with this, they would have probably ended up being GM, Ford, and Chrysler put together today.
Yeah.
They would have been in a super financial power position when it came to automotive transportation.
If it were ever revealed that Big Oil, for example, hid or suppressed this technology, and they did it all together, which is, a restraint, let's say, of free trade or something,
right?
Maybe they could all go to jail for it.
Well, you know, I suspect that the politicians who have earned 50% of their living from campaign donations, you know, according to the Internet Revenue Code, a person can run for office, and whatever money he doesn't spend in that campaign, he could pocket his personal income.
You mean when the election's over?
Right. If I run for Congress and I raise $10 million, I spend $1 million, the Internet Revenue Code allows me to take the other $9 million and put it in my pocket as long as I declare it as income.
As income, yeah.
So there's a lot of money to be made in the politicking of protecting the big energy companies, and I'm not going to name any of them, but the big energy providers.
They're all out there. We all know who they are. First-time caller line, you're on the air. Hi there.
Oh, hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Joe from Tucson.
Hi, Joe.
And I wanted to mention a couple things. One thing is that Art Bell built that big antenna up there at his place.
Sure did.
Yeah, and he tapped into the energy source, this universal energy source.
Yeah, he's grabbing it from somewhere.
Yeah, it's exactly what Tesla was talking about.
Art has created a Tesla antenna.
Well, you know, what's funny, too, is I talked to Art about a year and a half ago, and that was one of the first things that he mentioned was his antenna array, and I was like, and I didn't mention him tonight. I mentioned ham operators because I don't know who does and does not want their name mentioned, but he's done a phenomenal thing there, and it's something to be proud of with Art. I mean, Art's a smart guy.
Yeah, what he needs to do is develop that and power his house. Anyway, what I wanted to talk to the guest about is if there's any possible tie between Tesla and Royal R. Rife. Dr. Royal R. Rife picked up, I think, on Tesla's theories of vibration. Everything has a resonance.
It's a good point. I think you're absolutely right. Did you ever see that?
The writings of Tesla are sparse on what's available. The only person that I know that was actually direct, I don't know of any tie between Tesla and this gentleman, but I know that Henry Morey, a guy out of Salt Lake City, who was a huge fan of Tesla and went on to get his PhD in electrical engineering, came up with something very similar to Tesla. So, you know, people said, aren't people making this stuff out there? Well, yeah. this guy out of Salt Lake City, Henry Morey, did it, and he ended up getting shot.
Wildcard line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hey, George.
Hey.
Hey, Mark.
Hey.
This is Rob in North Carolina. How you guys doing?
Good, good.
We were having a discussion at a party on Sunday. It's funny, it's sort of prophetic, about these new hybrid cars, the Toyota Synergy Drive and this new Honda-powered Civic. I know they have an Insight, too. But the reason why we're talking about it is my sister has the Honda, has a Honda. It's in the core, it's the Civic. She gets 43 miles to the gallon. Now, they're advertising 50 miles to the gallon for the hybrid, which to me, 7 miles per gallon is piddly compared to what the price of the vehicle is and how nobody can work on it but some of the Honda dealers in the country. Most of them won't even work on. But I was speaking to my brother-in-law, and I said, why don't they just design a car that has two electric motors and with two separate battery sources, and when one motor runs and the other motor shuts down except for just to charge the batteries on a generator type of thing running on the wheels. And he said to me, he says, hey, Tesla did that 75 years ago. Is that the same type of thing, or is this box completely different?
From what I understand what you're saying, it's a little different. It almost sounds like he's talking about a DC motor, a direct current motor. And DC motors existed for electric cars, but the problem was is their inefficiency caused them to blow batteries up. It was Tesla's unique use of alternating current and, again, the mystical ethereal energy that set him apart as being unique. And then, of course, a caller calls and talks about Art pulling electricity out of his backyard out of the atmosphere with an antenna array.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah. What you're talking about, I think, is something that actually another car company, and I forgot the name of it because they're not around anymore, had worked at using direct current motors, and it ended up failing because of the strain on the batteries.
Well, also I wanted to mention, incidentally, that, you know, I drive, George, I've talked to George many times, I'm on the road everywhere, and I've seen actually a trucking company that must haul vintage cars, and their sign on the back of their car has got a picture of a Pierce Arrow. I don't know what year it is, but it must be one of the cars that they carry or have it in a museum, so there must be one of them somewhere around. I don't know whether it's the electric model, but there is definitely a Pierce Arrow. I think it might have been Woodrow Wilson's car.
Wilson was president during the time that these things were going on, and for the electric ones, there was only one made. But Pierce Arrow, lovely car, it's a very luxurious vehicle, and I see them in California here. I live in Los Angeles, so you see a lot of older cars because of the weather. And, no, it's a lovely car, but as for an actual electric version of it, the only one that was ever made was the prototype created by Tesla.
Okay, well, great show. Have a good night, George. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate it. I'm going to have the name of one of those car companies in just a moment, and you can tell me, Mark, if you think that's the name of it, because I think Jeff Bridges starred as the guy who was in charge of the company. It was named after
Tucker.
The Tucker, that's right. Was that it?
But no, it wasn't, but there's something to be said about the Tucker. And when you talk about innovation, and I like to think of myself like a person that can speak intelligently about most things, but Tucker was kind of a mini Tesla in the automotive industry. He came up with the first rear-mounted engines. He came up with the first aluminum alloy cast.
Safety engine. Features.
Safety
everything.
Features like seat belts. And he was run out of another person that was run out of the business by the industry.
They crushed him.
But I have to say this for Tucker. Out of the 50 Tuckers that he rolled off the line, 48 of them are still in roadworthy condition today.
Are they really? Collectors have them?
They had all 48 of them on the set of the movie when they filmed Tucker.
That is unbelievable.
And one of them was destroyed in a fire, so only one of them went the way of the world.
We got time for one more quick one before the break. International Line, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Mr. Norrie.
Yes, sir.
It's a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.
I credit you for bringing me back into intuition.
Excellent.
It was the program, I think it was a woman that was talking about reaching out to the plants.
Mm-hmm.
And that whenever a person enters into a room, that the plants recognize it.
I think her name was Shabira Bird, I can recall.
That Bird is right, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And her husband,
well, that was
late
about 6 or 9 months ago. And I switched on shortwave about a year ago with a Grundig S350 with a ground straight to the ground. And from there, I can pick up a little bit of what's going on with these ionospheric heaters.
What do you mean?
Scalar weapons.
I'll tell you, I'm going to take this break and put you on hold, but I'll come right back to you, okay?
If you want to hear about it, sure.
Absolutely. I'll be back. On our next Coast to Coast program, we're going to bring you some more stunning talk radio. And also this week, a roundtable discussion coming up on Earth Changes as well. So you've got a whole potpourri of great programs coming up on Coast to Coast this week. But when we come right back, more of your phone calls with our special guest, Mark DeMuha, on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our guest, of course, Mark DeMuha, and your phone calls. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, my name is Melissa. I'm calling from Windsor, California.
Hi, Melissa.
I had a question for your guest. I was researching, got interested in Tesla and Coral Castle back when you did the last Coral Castle show.
Okay.
And found on the Freedom of Information Act a document that I wasn't able to look up using Tesla. I looked it up using Sava, his nephew, and espionage. And it states in here where his papers are at, that they're in a Manhattan warehouse, the storage company. And it states that on January 26th, 27th, 1943, representatives of the Alien Report custodian made a thorough review of the entire effects that they took. And that was the only examination of papers as of April 17, 1950, that's when this was dated, this letter. That was the only examination of effects that took place, and that it was states that the group making the examination were U.S. Navy uniforms, and during the 2 days required to complete the examination, the civilian assistants in the group were identified as federal authorities, and then so there's no other instance of microfilming of the records of the Tesla estate has taken place since that time. I was wondering if he, you know, there's so much questions about where the papers are at. Has he heard of this Manhattan warehouse?
Well, I've heard of the Manhattan warehouse, but I have a document which looks like an abstract of a memorandum from the DOD. And having served in the military and seen a lot of DOD memorandums, I kind of have an idea what they look like. So it looks authentic. I'm not going to attest to it. But this is from the Department of Defense Research and Engineering Department, and it's a memorandum for the director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation requesting papers recovered on the death of Nikola Tesla.
Hmm.
And basically, just to summarize it, it says, we understand that the FBI may have in their possession a number of papers found after the death of Nikola Tesla in 1943. Now, the reason why I bring this up is because this is dated 9 February 1981.
Yeah, this one's 7-3-1980.
Right.
It's pretty close.
So what it looks like is the DOD over in R&D is looking to get a hold of some of this technology. And of course, looking at the dates here, we can only assume these many years later that they've gotten a hold of some of it. And during the Gulf War, there were reports of possibly an EMP weapon being detonated or used in the Gulf War. And again, electromagnetic pulse is tightly related to some of the things that Nikola Tesla worked on.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Let's go back to our international line now, as promised. You are on Coast to Coast. Okay, I'll let you finish your story. Thanks, sir.
Okay. Mr. DeMuha.
Yeah.
It is great that you are sending out the message about Tesla again. We were going to get peaches down at Niagara Falls, out by that way, in the fruit belt. And the man at the stand, the owner, he starts preaching to me about Tesla.
They have a beautiful statue of Tesla right there by the Niagara power plant.
Huh.
That's what brought it all up, yeah. And he's the man at the fruit stand is also setting up a website because it's a kinsman from the same nation.
Right. I've actually gotten a couple of emails from people that claim to be friends of family members of Tesla, which I'm going to actually research because this has become kind of a life pursuit for me. And I appreciate your thanks because this has become more important than just me making a movie now. That's why we took it to the internet. That's why we made this into a grassroots thing where we can let everybody in America participate and make this everybody's movie, not just mine and Mike's.
And Mark, what were you saying when you were dabbling around with your shortwave?
Okay, when Mr. Hoagland was talking about the Group B that was fighting back.
Right.
I've known that for a year, but I had no actual proof. When we had that CME, November 4th, I think it was last year, I had further proof because of the amount of radiation that was going through the atmosphere was affecting the shortwave frequencies that I was listening to.
Okay.
So I knew now exactly what to listen for. And I can give you those frequencies if you want.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
How many are there?
Oh, there's six of them. 4.353 and 7. 4.286, 4.350. Those are good an hour before sunset, and then most of the night. The other ones are 8.467, 8.58, I think it is.
We'll
make that 6.7.
6.7, all right.
Okay, let me start over again. 8.467, and also the other one is 8.843. Now, that last one, from what I can sort out, is the main one.
Now, what do we listen for?
Okay, what you listen for is the shunt, like the big diesel trains. They give that shunting sound. Then there's a secondary echo in behind that. I use a Grundig S350 with a direct ground.
And these are all megahertz, right?
Those are all megahertz, yes.
Okay, now once we're listening to this and we hear these shunts, what does this mean?
Then you listen for the next couple of days and listen for the differences. And what you'll find when those shunts are working, especially on that 8.483, that's when the good guys are out.
8.843, you said. Right?
8.843.
Yeah.
Plus or minus 3 kilohertz on all of them. Go on to the sideband, and you'll even find more information on that.
So that means somebody's playing around one way or another. We don't know if it's Team A or Team B, though, do we?
You can decipher it, yes.
You can?
You can. Go into intuition when you're listening to it. And then go to the direct source who knows everything.
Who's that?
The God Almighty.
Well, how am I going to do that?
The Most High.
How am I going to do that?
You're the one that brought it out into the public eye.
Oh, maybe I stumbled into it.
Yeah, you said pray for one another, put out the good thoughts, and get a return on it.
Well, all right, we'll try to do that. We'll let our ham experts work on that, though, because I can't. You're not a ham, are you, Mark?
All of my experience with any type of radios were directly related to military service, like the Singar and the PR-77s and the old Prick 77s, or what they call them.
East of the Rockies, welcome to Coast to Coast.
Good morning, George and Mark. This is a great show, George, by the way.
Thank you, sir.
Before I get into the patent for the ambient energy tapping device and for large-scale electrical energy storage, the lesser application for free energy or near-free energy, I want to implore of Mark to check out the work of William A. Tiller, a physicist at Stanford in material science, whose mathematics is backed up not only at that institution but Princeton, and whose work I believe today, and after examining many scientific and technological documents over the years, the most profound scientific revelation on Earth today. He's been on this show with Art Bell at one point, and if you check out Tiller in quotes, plus sign then in quotes, intention, end of quote, you'll get a revelation of the energy in one atom, and he talks about the hydrogen atom, that will have your jaw drop, and you will find that this man is, in your view, either on crack or has the most profound insights into the energy in this universe. And that reflects the comments of Nikola Tesla, what he found to be in the energy of one atom alone. And it's absolutely staggering. Please, folks, go on to the Internet, check out Intention plus Tiller, and look at what he has to say. The mathematics is there to back it up. It is shocking. It will shock you to your core.
See, but Tiller may have also been using some of Tesla's work, don't you think?
Tiller is knowledgeable, surely, of what Tesla's been about, but the continuation of the science and the mathematics is absolutely astounding.
Yeah. He's a physicist.
And I just implore your listeners and Mark to look at that. But I wanted to explore, in light of the importance of the ambient energy tapping device, what patent exists for that, but also for large-scale electrical energy storage. Now, the large-scale electrical energy storage is quite bizarre to me, the lesser of the application, but you know, it's odd that we don't even have a report in the free Western world, at least in North America, on this technology, let alone the application of it. We have to pay through the nose for energy we don't have because we don't store it, or sell off what we do have because we don't store it, even though you and I will have energy in our car battery, we'll have it in our flashlights, but hey, let's not have large-scale electrical energy storage, even though we've got superconducting magnetic energy storage, or SMES, and that's found under Google. What's the patent for the ambient energy tapping device, and what's the patent for large-scale electrical energy storage?
Do you know that at all? Maybe
you know, I have those patent numbers, but it's in a document that's got to be 500 pages.
Okay, you got to pull that out, obviously.
Yeah, so I'm going to find it and put it up on the website now just because he asked.
Okay, very good. Thanks. Appreciate the call. Wildcard line, your turn. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Is this George Norrison?
Yes, sir. You got him.
Norrison, you remember me, Scotty P?
Scotty P.
Hi, Mark, by the way.
Hi.
I don't, but that's okay.
Okay, remember, I thought you were Japanese. I call you Nori-san. And,
oh, that's right. Okay.
Anyways, do you know what happened 10 years prior to Katrina in New Orleans? It was the biggest storm prior to Katrina in New Orleans, correct?
Was it Ivan, right?
I'm not sure the name. No, this was after Andrew. It was in 1995, of April of 95, exactly 10 years, 6 months, give or take a week, prior to Katrina.
Was that Hurricane Fran?
Now, what I did was I was growing wheat, right? Art actually laughed me off the air for this. And I actually made it rain.
You made it rain.
Yeah, I tapped into the powers of God and whatnot. Okay, that's off the subject. I truly believe in what you guys say. To the core. I want to say that the pole shift will happen on 2012, and everything that the aliens and everything that's in the fourth dimension will occur. I'm 100% positive that that's going to happen, as well as our movie going to get made, Mark, and our movie Skater Hater, which I put on headline news, will be made as well. Now, remember the show you had with the sixth chakra and the seventh chakra of the earth that hasn't been formed yet?
Yep.
Okay. I truly believe that the seventh chakra, which us humans possess, human beings, which is going to evolve into a new race called Neo Sapiens, and you could go to neosapiens.net to see what they're doing, will evolve and give the Earth the seventh chakra, aligning it in a straight off the 23.5 degrees or whatever it is, 23 1/3 degree, aligning it. With that, of course, will come global things and massive people not around with us anymore.
But the year 2012 is the target year. Now, don't tell me Tesla ever wrote about that year, Mark, did he?
No, I didn't, and I'm glad that I got onto the show before you retired.
Well, I'm not going to retire. I've decided to change my mind. I'm going straight through until I stop.
No, you know, Nikola was an intuitive, without a doubt, but I don't think he ever looked farther ahead in anything other than the technology that he wanted to bring to humanity to make life here.
A lot of people, though, like Scott, think there's going to be a major upheaval at 2012. I don't think it will be, to tell you the truth.
Well, you know, the history of mankind is filled with people that were sure that certain things were going to, or certain times were going to be the end times. And I think it's one of those things where we just kind of got to wait it out. And if something happens, something happens. And if not, like you said, we're going to just have to ride it out.
Well, I got to tell you, of all the things that I've heard you talk about with Tesla, the one that astounds me the most was the experiment in 1908 that could have created the blast over Tunguska, Siberia.
And the thing about that, too, is that proves a point about what we have at our fingertips, technologically speaking, what's capable, what we're capable of, technologically, what we can do as human beings. You're talking about a massive amount of energy. You're talking about of course, Tesla, I don't think, ever had any malice in doing what he did.
But he probably didn't have any idea how powerful this was.
No, and I think that's why it again, I think he underestimated its power and its trajectory. I believe that what he did, I really believe that he was a peaceable man, and I think he introduced, even with what happened in 1908, I think his long-term goal was to create a situation where mutually assured destruction, if that's what we're going to use as the phrase we're going to use, or some other reason to have the bad people not want to fight.
Well, you know, the man was brilliant. I wonder what he could have been like with computers.
We'd be traveling across the galaxy. Right.
Absolutely.
Now.
He would have worked out models of everything he was doing. Unbelievable. And I think he would have been able to leak some of this free information to us, free energy, and somehow he put it in the right hands.
Well, we're going to keep pounding the pavement until either we shake somebody out of a tree, because I believe there are people out there that do have this technology, and they're just staying underground.
Let's see if we get time to squeeze in one more. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi there, George.
Yes, sir.
Mark, we have to talk about reality here. I happen to have the good fortune to know a PhD that was there at the Philadelphia experiment, and then also had a direct contact with Carl Lenti, a technician for that experiment.
Okay.
And this PhD, I had him in recent times actually create a 48-inch disc, which is basically a long testless thing, and he had to fly it because we did. And it's a generator, so the generator will fly if you configure it under the testless thing, using some of the modern technology.
Like an anti-gravity device?
It was an anti-gravity device. Ah. It flew on its own, had its own, and basically it was working with a time ship.
And this was in the 40s?
No, this was recent time here.
Oh, recent.
Recent time. Now, and then the other thing is, back in the Philadelphia experiment, with Carl Lente, which is a name that's known. He's a technician.
Right.
A dyslexic one. But the thing was that he indicated there was four cone-shaped Tesla coils on that ship in addition to a DC. So you had four AC currents with a DC current, which comes into scalar waves.
Well, we have always known that Tesla and his technology was also involved in that Philadelphia experiment. Mark, we're out of time. Good luck with the movie, my friend, and everything else you're doing.
It was a pleasure talking to George, and I look forward to talking to you again in the future.
For Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesor, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, I'll see you on the next edition, Dreams. Until then, be safe, everyone.